This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It is Danny Gallant, and today we get our in-studio visit from the one and only Brock Huard. He joins us for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Brock.
Good morning. It looked like Paul was mouthing red, right, tackle, C left, sprint left, G, U corner, half back, flat. You got
it? Can you do it?
Chupacabra, Algonquin, 50 something, 49, Turtles, America, hike. That's mine.
That's close.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Brock, we're on a chase this morning trying to find the actual audio of Russell Wilson talking about what
it
this
is en route. It is en route. Oh. I have an update from, the worldwide leader itself. And, I'm going to have to parse this audio and everything, but sources say it is on its way.
Nice. Hey. So we are going to have it. It does actually exist because it doesn't sound like Russell. Here is what Wilson said, and this is per Bob Tendota in the Seattle Times. I think we need a couple more, referring to players. I think we need a couple more. Jadeveon is a big-time guy that we would love to get back on our football team. He was so good in the locker room. He brought so many just havoc plays to the field. Hopefully we can get a few other players there on defense. Then, also on offense, we have a great offense, but I think we can always add more pieces. Brock?
Yes,
Danny. Is he right?
He's 1,000% right. I was listening to you guys have this conversation on my drive in this morning, and I would agree with you that it's a little bit off-brand. That I don't know if you're going to find over 8 years and within the first couple weeks of the offseason ever hearing Russell talk about anything other than how much he loves everybody he has and we can win with whatever we got. But I think this is a little reflective of some of the weight that he has had to carry the last couple seasons. And, you know, he's also down in Pro Bowlville, where he's a star, where Pete Carroll's a star, where they're getting doted on and loved on. And all these guys, you know, are talking about them in particular. And I think he's a little reflexive. Like, yeah, we need more game changers. And they do. I mean, look at these rosters that are going to be playing on Sunday. Yet another difference of how many just elite home run hitters do both of those rosters have, compared to how many the Seahawks have, especially defensively. Aside from Jadeveon and Bobby, where's your just like game changing? I think that's what he's talking about. We need more star power. We do need more playmakers. I tend to agree with you. It's a little off brand, but unlike you, Danny, I kind of like it. I kind of like Russell continuing to own. This is my team. This is the direction we're going. You've empowered me more and more over the last few years to take over the reins of this team. And now let's go get a couple more so we can take that next step.
I'd rather have him questioning the strategy than talking about personnel.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason is because this gets into a few toes over the line and you start to look and say, okay, well, if that's true, then should you be taking a little bit less money? Because if we're going to be honest, who's the one quarterback that's had a better team around him? It's Brady, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one guy. Has Drew Brees been set up better for success in New Orleans? They haven't won more than they've won in Seattle.
Nope.
There have been years where they missed the playoffs.
Yeah, 7-9.
They haven't won a Super Bowl since, the 2009 season?
I would say, though, Danny, on two fronts here. Number one, with the cap being, $196 million next year and them having $60 million to play with, some of that argument of, yeah, I'm sorry, we just got nothing left in the kitty is kind of gone. It's a little bit debunked. And when you're going to see Patrick Mahomes this offseason sign a $40 million a year deal and other guys start to inch closer to that as well and surpass Russell, all of a sudden a little bit of that noise quiets. Secondly, after 8 years, he's got enough ground to now stand on to make these comments. You know, these are the kind of comments that Richard would have made. These are the kind of comments that Earl Thomas would have made. And when they put together Pro Bowl season after Pro Bowl season after Pro Bowl season, when you're voting the top 20 of the great players in this league by your peers, and maybe even the top five in this upcoming NFL Network list, I bet, this preseason. When you're a second-team All-Pro, when you've rewritten the record books, you've actually got ground to stand on. He didn't have 3, 4, 5 years ago with his peer group on this roster. Now he does. It's my team. Let's go add a couple more stars and go win another Super Bowl.
Do you think there's a plan to this? Is this just subtle pressure, or is this part of maybe also a recruiting trip that he was making in Orlando with some maybe potential free agents?
You think Pete likes to recruit? Was Pete a very good recruiter at USC, I wonder?
He was very good. He was exceptional.
Yes. I bet there were some conversations with those to-be free agents. I think you got to be a little careful because they're probably still under some contract until the new league year begins. But, yes, I would hope they were actively out there recruiting. And I bet you when it's all said and done, Pete's going to say, hey, that's what we do, man. We turn over every stone. We look for every opportunity. That's what, you know, and then we get to hear Danny Parson just perfectly and 100%. And, you know, hopefully they do add a star or two.
Question number two. How do you think Richard Sherman's going to fare Super Bowl Sunday against this extra speedy Chiefs offense?
I think when he's in three deep and they run verticals, he's going to act like, and if someone's like 4 yards behind him, he's going to slow down and like point a finger and be like, dude, what's up? I think though, Patrick Mahomes will also be very careful testing him. Richard's one of those guys. I was trying to think about this on the drive in of a pitcher. Probably the best analogy is a pitcher. That when you're facing a hitter, you know, like, oh gosh, if I make a mistake, he doesn't have the bat speed he used to have. He can't hit every pitch. He's not going to do damage if I hit my mark. But man, if I miss, he still has enough that he can just make me look bad. And Sherman is not as twitchy as he used to be. You know, we saw it in the last game when he gets run by. There's an opportunity to run by him. But if you miss or you don't know for sure, that picture's a little cloudy. You know, there's probably, if Mahomes throws it 35 times, there's probably five he's throwing blind. Where you're like, I don't see it, but I'm going to let it rip and trust it. For Russell, it's more than that per game, I think, with some of his height. You're very reticent to do that as a quarterback because that guy can still make you pay as a ball hawk as well as anybody in this league.
What is it that is his biggest strength at this point in his career? I would imagine it's just the general football IQ.
Pattern reading, formation, studying formations and knowing what's coming. It's like that Kyle Shanahan audio you had of that last game where he's telling the ref, hey, we're going to run a little, you know, 6 yard out here. Give that little ref an indicator of George going to break out. You better watch that corner, see if he grabs him. Richard, he's just at a different level. He has been. His acumen is just absolutely off the charts, and that's what's allowed him, I think, to offset a little bit of the foot speed with these injuries that have caught up to him.
Brock, do you remember when I used to mispronounce that word?
Acumen? Yeah, acumen?
Acumen. He had tremendous acumen.
Yeah, that was almost as good as me going maniacal. Oh, you mean maniacal? No, I mean maniacal.
You guys were still transitioning from your previous lives into radio. No so we'll let him slide. Yeah. Maniacal.
He's maniacal. In his
he is absolutely maniacal. Or when you go grape nuts crazy.
That too.
You still, I mean, understand the word. It's not like anyone's confused.
Well, Danny, do you have any of those that you still read? Because you're just an active reader, man. Leaders are readers, and you've been a leader as a reader for a long time. Are there some that you still look at and like, ooh, I'm still butchering it.
I don't think I've had one recently where it's come out of my mouth completely awfully wrong, like acumen or like NUI instead of ennui. Like there's some. I do have idiot vocabulary words that end up being dropped in from time to time.
Gosh, what was the other one? Didn't you have like a martial arts one? What was? Yeah, I thought you had another funny one too.
Jiu-jitsu?
No, I'll think about it. It may hit me here in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, I had one a couple weeks ago that I got made fun of for intransigent.
Listen.
People did not like intransigent.
Oh. As long as you've never actually thought for multiple years that it was nip in the butt, I think you're good.
That's true, Paul did. That's something you want to nip in the butt.
Sort of sounds like fun.
Yeah.
You really try.
The part of it, it's just like, I really wonder what Gallant's into if he's trying to nip things in the butt.
Hey, this is a family-friendly show, Danny. Come on.
Yes!
Question three.
Question three, Brock. The Chiefs had a god-awful defense last year. It was terrible. Would the fact that they're in the Super Bowl, does that offer hope to the Seahawks that in one offseason you can make enough improvements that that defense is no longer the albatross that weighs you down?
Yes. I mean, that we can look across the league, I think, many times and see that and see how quickly those fortunes can turn, both good and, like the Rams, a little bit bad in a season. The Chiefs made a staff change. They bring in Steve Spagnuolo, who's going to and did change a lot of their system. You could just see their feel, right? The honey badger on the back end of things, just settling it down, just some comfort there. Frank was, you know, wreaking havoc with 8-plus sacks and even more, I think, in the run game. And Chris Jones is an excellent player. And they're still vulnerable. I mean, I could see this game being in the upper 30s. I don't know what the all-time Super Bowl points record is, but I think these two could challenge that, because I think the speed of Kansas City is really going to burden the back end if they can protect it all. And then I think the 49ers run game is going to attack the second level of that defense. They're thin up front. They're a little bit undersized in the secondary. I could see this game. I hope it is a 42-38, a 38-35. Just one of those games that goes back and forth, because they do both have holes. But yes, Danny, you know, I think we saw that with Quandre Diggs in season. We saw that with Jadeveon Clowney this year before the sports hernia. I mean, you bring in a couple pieces, and I think that's really, and maybe I'll spin Russell to sit, you know, into a way that's more comfortable and palatable for you and me, and that is, hey, you know, we made a couple additions in season, and you see the impact they can have. We got enough young depth. You're always going to have depth with John and Pete. It's always what they're going to shoot for. Just give me some guys that have been there. 49ers point to Richard Sherman and say that Mamba attitude has been just a huge key. It doesn't take a 10 new starters. It can take one or two guys to add to Quandre and Jadeveon and Bobby. And all of a sudden, yeah, you start to feel a whole lot better about yourself defensively.
There wasn't a whole lot of pressure on them in these last several games. I mean, if you go back to the Chiefs winning streak, they beat Phillip Rivers twice. They beat Mitchell Trubisky. They beat Tom Brady. They beat guys that aren't playing at a high level. I know that they're definitely really confident right now, and I think there is something to be said for a team that gets hot. But I do wonder, this stage,
yes,
where you're not going up against Ryan Tannehill or a Texans team that you know is just the Texans. Like, historically, we know what happens to them in the playoffs. Going up against a team that's competent, do their leaders, who haven't been in these spots before, Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark, play the same way?
They do, but I think some of their other weaknesses get absolutely exposed. And I thought it was a little tell last night. I didn't watch a lot of the coverage of Media Night, but I heard enough and read enough that one thing jumped out to me, and that was the 49ers saying, you know what, the game plan's done. Like, the hay is in the barn, and we're able to come down here and relax a little bit because we got our plan in. That only happens when you feel really good about it. Like, yeah, we could put this plan in because we know George Kittle's a mismatch. We know our three running backs give an opportunity. We know we've got some speed and size advantages. We know that, you know, that we've got enough offensively to really challenge their weaknesses, Paul, defensively. So, as I said, I think this could be going up and down the field, because if Kansas City can protect Mahomes at all, man, that speed is lethal. And we have seen that, you know, over the last 6-7 weeks as well.
That is Blue 42. It's brought to you by our friends at Toyota of Puyallup. We're very grateful for having Brock in here. Here's the other part, Brock, and this is probably the bigger thing. I think players are terrible at being GMs. And I think when you say, hey, go out and get some free agents, who are you going to go get?
Yep.
Is signing Matthew Judon to a top-tier, top-shelf contract,
right,
is that going to make your defense better? The Packers went out, and the Packers had one of the best off-seasons, right?
Yes.
They signed Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, and those guys, how did that work for them in the NFC Championship game? And now they're at the point where, okay, you've kind of spent your wad.
Yep.
When it comes to improving that defense, free agency is expensive.
Oh, for sure. There's no question about that. And they will not pull the credit card out, and they are not going to overspend, and they're not going to go crazy with any of that. I think that's also, make sure you take care of Jadeveon. Let's get this thing done. I do wonder, Danny, what do you think Pete and John's reaction is to this? If they're back home and they're beginning to work this week, right, and this is going to be talked about and written about and such, and it's going to be a conversation piece, how do you think Pete and John react? Do you think there's a part of them that's like, oh, that's kind of good? Like, I tell my daughters, right, in their young, competitive state, and I'm like, hey, don't complain about it. Go talk to them, whether it's a teammate, whether it's a coach. Like, you've got to initiate that, and just, you never know what's going to happen in that conversation. But sitting here behind the scenes and, no, go up and talk right to them.
Is Russell Wilson going to have a better idea than both Pete Carroll and John Schneider as to if the team is really close? I mean, I would think that the coach and the general manager are going to have a much better idea of that.
Yes, I think so. But is it kind of nice to hear from the voice of your program, the captain of your team, who's willing to go out there and say, yeah, we still need a couple more? Or do John and Pete like, dude, shut up. Let us do our work. right? You may have said this privately in the past, but hey, man, publicly, let us do our thing, just as, you know, we've tried to allow you and foster environment for you to flourish.
I don't know if I can put myself in their shoes. I know that it would be hard for me to take it seriously after seeing a picture of him with a man bun earlier in the week. Like that would dilute in half the credence that I would. No, seriously. Honestly, if I was them, I would think like, great. Fine, that's cute, and I think it's nice. He said it in the nicest way possible. Mm-hmm. He said, go get me some guys in the nicest way possible. Yeah. But I would think to myself, you know what? I stuck up for you when Richard Sherman was complaining about how you played, or Doug Baldwin took, like, those, worry about yourself.
Yep.
We're going to take care of the other things. Your job is to do the most with what's gotten on the roster. And if you have observations, feel free to offer them. But, like, does that make an impact on me to hear it in the press? No, I don't need to hear that from you.
You can say worry about yourself. I would say the devil's advocate argument, and I feel very okay with what Russell Wilson said. In fact, I liked it. But if you look at Tom Brady and the lack of a supporting cast that he had this season, one that he was very visually upset with over the course of the season, maybe that's what Russell Wilson saw. And even with all the years of success that led up to this season, maybe he thought to himself, you know what? I can't be in a situation where all of a sudden I've got nothing around me.
Dude, what am I saying? You got a little bicep over there, Gallant.
Oh, thank you.
Dude, I had no idea, Danny. This guy's got a little, he's a little jacked up on
he's
you.
He's a game breaker, Ross?
Yeah. Is he wearing a Schmedium t-shirt? Is it Schmedium?
Well, it's medium. But yeah. I mean,
Schmedium. Medium.
You're gonna shame me for a medium? I mean, technically, it's like a medium, you know? I mean, come on.
And the ability to show off, if you've got it, you should flaunt it.
There's
absolutely
no
that game breaker. That
here's
game breaker
a problem.
Type
like
speed.
Here's a problem. Like the more of my skin you see, the more likely you are to go blind. I think a lot of my friends found that out the hard way in Miami this past weekend. Like, I'm kind of tan right now. In case you couldn't tell. Bro.
Yeah, you look good.
Really tan.
Look good, feel good, talk good. Have a good show, boys.
Thanks, Brock.
Thank you very much, Brock. You bring up Tom Brady, Paul. And I think that's really interesting, because one of the things that Brady has done over the course of his career is he's let other people complain for him about his supporting cast. I remember very clearly when Deion Branch was traded here to Seattle in 2006, there was a long list of storylines about, does Brady feel that he's being, his offense is being underfunded? Does Brady feel resentful that he didn't max out his earning potential and now he's having, and one of his best friends on the team and a Super Bowl MVP is being traded away because they didn't want to pay him? He's been able to have other people say that for him, yet it was after those decisions were made that the team took its quantum leap forward, that they ended up making the play for Moss and they ended up shifting the offense so it was onto him. And I'm not sure what to make of all of that. Maybe that was sort of his own way of kind of not acting out, but sort of voicing his piece. Or maybe it was that Tom Brady, when he was upset about Deion Branch, didn't have an accurate view of how good Branch was, because if anybody, that was the Seahawks getting the wool pulled over their eyes.
The funny thing is, though, they brought him back in 2009 after the Randy Moss situation didn't work so well, and Branch was really good for them in his second go-round with the Patriots. It's a weird thing with
Brady.
That
was the most maddening thing in the world.
I can totally understand that. I can totally get it.
Oh, now you want to play well? And the Seahawks recouped a significant value for him. They basically got Marshawn Lynch for Deion Branch. So it's not like they got overall fleeced and enough time had passed that you knew you weren't going to get more. That was infuriating.
It made sense, I mean, to trade for him. I was there for Deion Branch's first game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, the 2002 season opener. He was outstanding in that game. I thought that was a huge mistake, them moving on from Deion Branch with how good he had been. It's one of those things where, for whatever reason, sometimes the guys that work in New England don't work elsewhere, but Tom Brady has a very specific vision for who he likes to throw to, and I can see over time how he would get sick of it. I think the good thing for the Seahawks, though, is that, I mean, if Russell Wilson has a problem with this supporting cast in terms of offensive talent around him, I mean, he's always going to have an issue with the supporting cast around him. With Tyler Lockett, with DK Metcalf, a healthy Will Disley, theoretically, Chris Carson and Rashad Pennyback, theoretically, like, it might be him just sitting back and saying, yeah, this defense, it needs more than just Jadeveon Clowney as a centerpiece on a front seven that just does not have a lot of guys that can have any impact on a game outside of Clowney when he is healthy.
I would be more excited about Seattle adding offensive players in free agency than I would about them adding defensive players. I want them to use their draft capital for defensive players. That's where I think you're by far better going with young defensive players and veteran offensive players. And here's the other reason for that. Any money you spend on defense is in some ways going to be spent out of desperation to improve it. you're going, and I think that is the worst situation to get into as a franchise, where you talk yourself into, and that's where you make mistakes because you're like, man, we need something to fix it. All of the worst contracts that the Seahawks have signed in free agency typically have been to address a short-term need. And some of those contracts have even worked in the short term. Signing Patrick Kearney as a free agent worked in the short term for this team, did not work in the long term. Use the draft for the defense, use free agency for the offense, because you're not going to be spending. At that point, you can actually make a decision based on value as opposed to need.
In principle, I agree with you. However, this past offseason, you used a first-round pick on LJ Collier, and look at what you have gotten for yourself. You're not sure. Best-case scenario. I mean, that's not a great place to be in. There's nothing even promising right now with LJ Collier.
Charitable, that's the most charitable way that you could say it, of like, you're not convinced he's this bad. He has to, almost by definition, contribute more in the future.
I'm trying to put the positive spin zone on this one. And then you look at free agency. Are you more likely to find in the draft someone that can actually have an impact right away, let alone be someone that you think is going to be a contributor at some point, or are you more likely to find that person in free agency taking a risk? The answer is the latter. The answer is taking a risk in free agency. The big problem is if you miss with that, you really are hamstrung. With LJ Collier, look, maybe he can turn things around. Honestly, I'm very skeptical on that front. But at the very least, you have a couple of years to work with this where you're not paying him a whole lot of money. If you do go after that big high-ticket free agent, in addition to bringing back someone like Jadeveon Clowney, this thing all starts blowing up. And when it starts blowing up, you do get to a point, even with the salary cap ballooning the way that it does, where all of a sudden other guys want to get paid. And it continues and it continues and it continues. I think, though, that their best chance of getting that immediate impact player is through free agency, because I just think, you know, drafting at the back of the first round, what kind of pass rusher are you getting? What kind of cornerback are you getting? Those are the two things you need.
Isn't that the same is true, though, for free agents? The one weird thing about NFL free agency is that the best players don't make it there. The best players,
if you're franchise tagged,
they're either re-signed or they're franchise tagged. I would be more interested in the Seahawks trading for a guy who got franchise tagged than I would be for them signing someone who was available on the open market.
Trading for a guy that gets franchise tagged means you give him the big time contract. I mean,
You trade a pick for the right to do it.
That's you're giving up two things.
Yes.
And I suppose that, yes, a guy who is getting franchise tagged, that means that team really likes him a lot. So there's definitely a lot more of a chance for success. But man, to give up multiple things.
Like, I know.
Do you have the resources right now in your cabinet to do that? Do you have in three picks in the first two rounds and a gargantuan amount of salary cap space, but a lot of missing parts defensively to get you to where you need to go? Do you really have the ability to do that? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'd be very nervous about them having all of this cap space and deciding, even though we've got three picks and even though we have $60 million to work with, we're going to give up a lot of both for one specific player, because that could very well come to bite them in the keister.
Show me the last time a great pass rusher was signed as a free agent who then had an immediate impact on his team. Za'Darius Smith is pretty close to the top of the list of effective pass rushers that have been signed. When you look over the past few years about the guy that was signed that went to a new team and became an immediate impact pass rusher, it's hard to find.
It's
an incredibly rare trait in football. And the idea, you end up almost inevitably siding with or signing with the guy that is kind of this mid-tier. Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett are the ideal scenarios. The problem is, the reason you got those guys was because the salary cap, because the market that year was inexplicably slow. And maybe we're headed toward that sort of thing. And maybe the market broke in their favor. And maybe that's your hope, is that, hey, we'll see how it goes. And maybe we can get a couple guys at sort of mid-level contracts and convince them this is a great place to play.
And therein lies the problem, because Ziggy Ansah was one of those guys this past offseason. And look how that worked for you. And look, you could find a Justin Houston, who I thought was pretty good for the Colts this past season. You could go back in time to when the Denver Broncos brought in DeMarcus Ware. But I mean, that's what you're talking about there, Danny. You're talking about guys that are probably over the hill, that are being let walk because those teams think they're over the hill. They're not worth those contracts anymore.
Well, a couple people have texted in Frank Clark. A couple people have texted in Khalil Mack. And that, in some ways, kind of proves the point. Neither of those guys was true unrestricted free agents. Both were franchise tag.
Right.
You had to trade a pick for the right to pay those guys. Seattle has some choices to make. And I believe our resident gumshoe, Jessamine McIntyre, has tracked down the sound of Russell Wilson. We'll see what I'm so hot and bothered about and whether this is one big nothing burger that I'm biting into. We'll hear Russell ask for help next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
You do realize all the rest of us are saying it's about time Russ spoke up. This comes from the 253 and said, let's get guys in here to win a Super Bowl instead of cliche after cliche. I think we all love a go for it and get this stuff done attitude by Russ. Let's freaking win, baby, exclamation point. Maybe that is what we'll hear. After a morning of searching, we found the quote that Bob Condotta first cited in the Seattle Times, and it's Russell Wilson from the Pro Bowl being asked about kind of what's the next step and how do you get over the hump for the Seahawks.
Are you confident, Russell, that the pieces are in place on this team
I think we need a couple more. I think Jadeveon's a big time guy that we would love to get back on our football team. He was so good in the locker room. He brought so many, you know, just havoc plays to the field. Hopefully we can get a few other players there on defense. And then also on offense, we have a great offense, but I think we can always add more pieces. And I think that's going to be the part that's going to be great with John Schneider and Pete as well in terms of this offseason's free agency. Free agency is very, very key to get superstars on your team and try to get great players that can fill the space. And then the draft. We always do a great job in the draft, and that's going to be really important to get some young stars up and coming.
It's very tame. At the core of it, I don't agree with him saying that. If you're going to say and ask for different players and improvements, it's about as mellow and about as agreeable as you can possibly make it. And I don't want to make it so like Russell stepped out of it. I see him just with a couple toes on the other side of the line where I'm like, I don't think this is productive. I don't think it's helpful. And I honestly think that anything that you can say in that regard of improving the roster, if you're actually going to say it as the quarterback, you need to say it directly to your coach and GM, and saying it in that way, there's not anything good that can come of it. And in fact, it probably will rub some people the wrong way, like it rubs me the wrong way.
Do you think that he's had that conversation with them? Do you think that he's gone up to them privately, to Pete Carroll, to John Schneider, and said, look, we need just like a couple of big time pieces. We're that close.
I think so. And if he hasn't, saying it publicly like that, I'm sure that he's saying what everyone thinks. I don't think anybody looks at this team and says, all right, man, that is a ready-made, just add water Super Bowl team next year. It's not like 2012 where you just bring him back. At the same time, he might just be trying to fill space and say what's expected, and this is the cliche. I think at the root of it, though, I would feel the same way if somebody talked about the play of the quarterback needed to improve. And when there had been insinuations about that, or when his teammates in the past have talked about, where I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, that's one guy you don't need to worry about. Like, worry about yourself. The quarterback's fine. And I feel that when you get players that start speaking out in these sort of ways, that you're walking into a territory where, okay, well, then the next question is, do you want to help them get other people by taking less money? Because it opens the door for a lot of, are you sure that you did everything you could? And we look at Russell, and he was great. And above all else, I don't want players making GM decisions because I think players are terrible GMs.
I understand that. I mean, LeBron James is the perfect example of that. But at the same time, I hear this quote now, and after getting past that impressive scream that was in the background by that random person, congratulations on your high-pitched scream, I looked at the whole thing, and I thought to myself, the only thing that really seemed pointed in it, especially when you hear the tone that Russell Wilson says it in, is that Jadeveon Clowney was a big-time influence in the locker room. And look, Jadeveon Clowney should be back. And who's better to gauge whether or not someone is well-liked and well-respected in a locker room than Russell Wilson? And especially now, because it's different. It's different than it was back in the day when the Legion of Boom guys were running things and they were the dominant personalities in said locker room. That is really the only thing that seemed like specifically pointing anywhere from Russ in that spot.
Love that. Yeah. I love him. I love it when guys say, hey, he was a great influence for us. We want him back. I think that's great.
they liked him. They clearly did. And look, that's not surprising to me, because having covered Jadeveon Clowney in Houston, he's very affable. He's a very fun person. I really enjoy him, just the human being. I think he's really funny, and I've said this before. The NFL needs to mic him up. It would be absolutely hysterical, though I doubt we would get the best version of it. But whatever the case, the rest of that clip from Russell Wilson that you heard there, you're just hearing him basically say the same kind of cliches that we always hear him. He's basically like, well, in free agency, you know, sometimes you sign guys because guys are good, the guys are important. And then in the draft, you draft young players because you draft young players to get your team better.
He says we need a couple stars. He says we need a couple stars. Yes, and he shouldn't be saying it.
But doesn't every team need a couple of stars every single offseason?
Sure, but saying it in this, we need a couple more. We need a couple more is a terrible message for, and it is the wrong thing for a teammate to be saying, because it implies that everything that's necessary for success is not on the roster. And it's not the quarterback's place, even as important a player as Russell Wilson is to the team.
If we were to poll the entire locker room and we ask them, hey, a couple of superstars, are you a Super Bowl team? Wouldn't most of them say yes?
But if you ask them, what do you guys need to do this offseason? And they said, we need to go out and get a couple stars. I would say every one of them, worry about yourself. Like, that's the GM and the coach's decision. That's the job. Like, as a roster, you're not offering observations about what you need to add gets into very dangerous territory in my mind. And I think that your two toes, he did it as nicely and as tamely and as politely as you possibly can. And when you boil it down and get to the root of it, saying that we need to go out and add free agents, that's not his department. That's not his department at all.
You're always focused on yourself in this league. And you've brought that up, that maybe you should just focus on yourself when it comes to any sort of public commentary. And I totally understand it from the perspective of, if I am someone else in this locker room that maybe is a bubble guy, oh, we need some help at cornerback, and I'm Trey Flowers and I hear that, I wouldn't like hearing that. I wouldn't. But at the same time, I would also say, well, I mean, I got to be self-aware enough to realize that I did not have a good game against the Packers in the last game of the year. And that is maybe why there is somebody else in the locker room that feels that way.
That's the GM's job. It's not the quarterback's job to start setting those expectations. Because is the minute that you start doing that, the first thought that I have is, okay, well, if you didn't leverage out and max out your contract, there'd be more room to do that. And the second thing is, who do you think got better equipped? Who do you think, and you look around the league, who's had a better team put around them over the entirety of their eight seasons? They are going through a rebuilding period. But looking and saying, hey, we need to bring in some help here, it never sits well with me when I hear a player do that.
And look, I get it, because it sort of is treading down that dangerous, dangerous path to the dark side of the passive-aggressive force. You don't want to become Sith Lord Aaron Rodgers. You don't want to go all the way down that rabbit hole. And you could, for some people, say, oh, this is the first step. This is the first step towards the obnoxious nature of Aaron Rodgers and how he sometimes talks about his team, his teammates. But I do think that this is relatively innocuous. I also think at the same time, when you're looking at a guy that is asked about where this team stands and things that they can do differently, I like hearing that he wants to continue to bring guys in. I like hearing that he's not satisfied. I know that that's not necessarily good for his relationship with John Schneider and with Pete Carroll, but when you're in a league where you are constantly looking out for yourself and you don't know when you're ever going to be cut or released and you don't know how long you have to play in this year and you're getting smacked every single game five times because the offensive line in front of you isn't that good in pass protection, all of these things add up to a guy that should be looking at the entirety of the roster. And if he has the ability to change anyone's opinion, what is the harm in saying, hey, we could use a couple more players? Like, is this going
to harm? The harm in staying it is that, well, then you, what if the offensive lineman started talking about maybe you wouldn't take so many sacks if you didn't hold on to the ball so long? And people would look at it, maybe there'd be more money to spend on a pass rusher.
And you're right.
If you didn't take it up and impose deadlines and get negotiations.
But he wasn't specific.
It's a step in that direction.
But he wasn't. You're right. You're right. And if he takes the full step, yikes. Okay? I am totally with you there. But this was such like a benign comment to me. And I understand your perspective. Like it's a weird situation to be in when the quarterback is all of a sudden saying, well, this is how we should do it. That is,
I feel the same way hearing Russell say that. as I felt when I would hear Doug Baldwin or Richard Sherman or another player say something that I thought was a slightly side-eyed shot at the play of the quarterback. I feel the exact same way, which is, okay, you guys kind of don't know how good you have it with that quarterback, and you should probably worry about yourself. And when I hear Russell say that, I feel the exact same way.
Maybe he learned it. Maybe this is a learned behavior from some of his older, bigger brothers that used to be in this locker room that have now gone off to college.
Seahawks defense needs to be better. It doesn't necessarily need to be good. We'll look at how far away Seattle is from having a defense that can allow them to get to the Super Bowl. That's next here on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
So, Danny, I saw a headline on your favorite website, ProFootballFocus.com. The headline read as follows: how the Chiefs got worse at rushing the passer, but better as a defense in 2019. I read that and I thought to myself, I'm still having a hard time buying into this defense actually being all that much better. I mean, did they really improve over this stretch to close out the year? Yes, they went on a really impressive winning streak, and they are now playing in the Super Bowl. But the teams that they beat, not that impressive. And I do wonder about the idea of going up against a team that can throw the kind of offensive balance that San Francisco can, because Phillip Rivers, Derek Carr, Tom Brady, Drew Locke, Mitchell Trubisky, the guys that they played down the stretch, Ryan Tannehill, wasn't really challenging them that much.
They also were missing one of their better defensive players. I know Chris Jones played in the AFC Championship game. Chris Jones is a monster.
He's really good.
Like that dude, I think he's their best defensive player when it comes down to it. The power and speed that he has, the disruption from inside. I think Tyrann Mathieu played really well this season. They're better than they were last year.
And yes.
Are they good? I don't know about that. The idea of it being coverage and not pass pressure, that coverage is the biggest difference as opposed to pass rush, it's different than I've always been told by people, which is that those two things work hand in glove. And in fact, the quickest way to hobble an opposing offense is with pass rush. That's the thing that creates turnovers, whether it's the quarterback is the most likely player to fumble the ball, whether it's stripping the ball from him or whether it's forcing him into early throws, that pass pressure is what correlates with turnovers. There's increasing, the analytics community has tackled that question, and I think seems to be pushing toward the idea that coverage is more important than we think, and that it actually might be better coverage that complements the pass rush and provides time for the pass rush as much as it is vice versa. I'm interested in that idea. For me, here's what I look at the Chiefs. They were awful last year, and they just had to be not bad this year. Like, they didn't even actually have to be good for that team to reach the Super Bowl. They just had to be there was a tipping point, a breaking point where they were too bad last year, and just being merely average or slightly below average is good enough given their offense. Which I think the Seahawks can be not awful next year. Like they can improve to the point of being not awful. That's not a huge ask.
But here's how you do it. The way that the Chiefs play totally ruins another team's game plan, and it does it in an instant. You saw the Texans jump out to that big lead in the divisional round of the playoffs. Six touchdowns later, all of a sudden the Texans are now just shooting the football down the field every single play. And of all the teams that the Chiefs played down the stretch that actually have a passing attack that's dangerous, the Texans were the one because they have a good quarterback. They have a guy that can extend plays in Deshaun Watson, that same quarterback. Will Fuller, who can stretch the field. DeAndre Hopkins, arguably the best wide receiver in the game. And the Texans did get their yards against Kansas City, who had a big blown coverage play on Kenny Stills early on in that game. I think that Kansas City's defense is better than what it was last year. It has to be by default. They fired their entire coaching staff. They got rid of half of their defensive players. Like, it had to be better in some way, especially with how poorly they played in that conference championship game against a Tom Brady that does not look to be the same Tom Brady that we've seen in the past. But this defense being really that much better, I have a hard time buying it. And I do think that the Seahawks are a little bit different in that they don't break a team's game plan when the offense has a great day at the office. Their offense is, as we have seen in the past, more reactive to how a game unfolds than dictating how another team is going to play.
I agree with that. I think that's true. And the way Seattle plays puts more pressure on your team's defense. I think that's true. That Seattle has to be able to win a rock fight. And that requires having at least a competent defense. It's hard to win those sort of games because even if it's close, nip and tuck, you're going to need stops at some point. And it was hard for them specifically. I think the one big failing from what we've seen previously, we've seen this team start slow before. It's been a penchant. But when they start coming back, they need to at least get a couple of holds on the defensive end. And they had a hard time getting stops. I looked at it from the perspective, though, that it's optimistic to think that you can change it and that Seattle in some ways is in the spot that Kansas City was a year ago. I don't expect them to make wholesale changes on their defensive coaching staff or their format. Andy Reid's an offensive coach, and he just decided to have a different group call his defense. This is Pete's defense. They're not going to start running a different defense. Will they make some changes? But I think the personnel, there's almost inevitable improvement next year based on the fact that they've got to get some different guys in there, and almost by default, they're bound to improve.
They were really aggressive, Kansas City. I mean, they make that big trade with the Seahawks to get Frank Clark. And they bring in a guy in Tyrann Mathieu. They paid him a lot of money. As someone who covered him with the Texans last season, he was well overpaid for his performance in Houston. He did not play particularly well. I will give him credit. He has had a really good playoff run, and he has, on top of that, made some really big-time plays. And here's one of the things that I think about this Kansas City team that really helps him out. Kansas City, when they change the game and they basically break it for the opposing team's offense, Tyrann Mathieu can just play with entirely instinct. It's nothing else. And when he is playing with instinct, it is really something fun to watch. It's a la Troy Polamalu back in the day. And who's really going to be taking advantage of him in those situations? But I do wonder in a game against, say, San Francisco 49ers team that I do think has the ability to, at the very least, confuse Kansas City and to make them look a lot more like the actual defense that they are. I really, really wonder how Tyrann Mathieu will fare in a game where there's the element of deception involved. And if he makes mistakes, and if he starts to pout, and if he starts to point. Because he did that a lot last season in Houston.
Do you think the Chiefs are going to win, or do you think it's going to be the 49ers?
I've been back and forth on this one. I think that the 49ers conceptually have a football team with the offensive balance that they have, with the receivers that they have around a quarterback that's above average, and defensively, what they can bring to the table with that pass rush and just the smarts in the secondary, I think they're more ready for this one. But Kansas City just plays a totally different brand of football, and it never feels like they're out of a game. And honestly, if they play better in the first half against New England in last year's conference championship game, they're in the Super Bowl. I don't know why they weren't able to score in that first half. They are sometimes big-time slow starters. A slow start, I think it's likely for Kansas City. I think San Francisco would be able to take advantage of that. It's just a matter of, like, how long can they do it? It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. He is Danny O'Neill, and I'm Paul Gallant. Coming up next, look, we're not going to Miami for Radio Row like a lot of other radio stations across the country are, but guess what? We have got a Super Bowl correspondent, Seahawks tight end Luke Wilson. He is going to join us next, and we'll ask him if maybe the Seahawks are a star or two away from competing for a Super Bowl. And if he's got any free agency thoughts, don't go anywhere. 710 ESPN Seattle.